Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Talking with writer Chuck Thompson, the new book is The Status Revolution, the improbable story of how the lowbrow became the highbrow. And I just before the bottom of the hour, I sort of blurted out, it used to be that a luxury brand got that reputation because it was handmade, you know, it was haute couture, you would go in and get measured, it was a representation that you had the money to spend on getting something made exactly right for you. Now I would say almost everything that has a luxury brand logo on it is probably made more poorly than any of the other brands we buy. I don't know, where are you with that?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, what I feel like is that, I mean, brands like, you know, Gucci, Prada, whatever, name your favorite, they still indicate some monetary advantage because they are expensive by and large, but they no longer convey this sense of status or elitism or excellence. Right. And a big reason that is the consolidation of luxury brands over the past quarter century has changed the luxury industry considerably. I mean, for one thing, when you're a small family-owned, you know, artisan house, you're not worried about pleasing shareholders and expanding your market reach to every country on the planet. So what were once these small family-run entities are now part of large corporations. LVMH, you know, Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy owns, what, 75 or 80 brands. They own Tiffany. They own Bulgari. Richemont owns Cartier and Montblanc and Ralph Lauren and so forth. And one of the big conundrums facing these contemporary status marketers is reconciling the fact that while a product's prestige is often based on scarcity and cost, in order to attain the scale necessary to remain globally competitive, a consolidated brand now has to attract a mass following, right? But the concepts of scarcity and mass production are totally at odds. And so the scarcity part of the game is over.
Right.
And people like you have recognized that.
Yeah. Well, and I was told that once. I was told if you want to look like, I was forget how old I was, but somebody in my church or somebody told me, said, if you want to look like a success, don't advertise somebody else's product. Have something custom made. Custom made by a tailor. There's going to be no big label sticking out, but it will be what the original concept was. It's made just for you. You're not somebody else's brand. You're not walking around with somebody's sandwich board's logos all over you. You're just, you are who you are, and it fits you.
Well, and that's given rise to this phenomenon known as counter-signaling, in which, you know, very wealthy people, your CEO of your company will show up to the boardroom in, you know, his baggy jeans and a right. San Diego Padres t-shirt or something. It's sort right. of to say that, you know, we're going, at this point, you're better off rejecting those kind of traditional brands for that very reason that you just outlined.
Right. Yep. Okay, but that's, again, this speaks to when, this goes back to your CNN days, you know, Ilsa Clinch would be covering something on the CNN fashion thing on Saturday, and, you know, within 2 months, you'd see people wearing it, and I always kind of challenge that notion that there's a select few of people who decide how the world should be dressing. And all of that individualism or expression goes out the window, and suddenly people are getting in lockstep behind something that looks terrible on them.
You know, I did a whole lot of research for this book, and I ended up leaving a lot of it on the proverbial cutting room floor, and a whole chapter on fashion was one of them. It's a really tricky one to get my head around. In the end, I kind of decided that fashion trends don't necessarily equal status. I get that there's a Venn diagram overlap there, that
right.
you know, you dress it a certain way, or you have a certain, no matter what community you're in, whether you're a mafia don or a hip hop artist, you know, the way you dress does matter. You are what you dress to some degree still. I never quite could put my head around this, Ian, to be honest, where trends stop and fashion stops and status begins. And, you know, that's another point I make in the book, which is status is such a massive and sprawling concept. I mean, apart from economic payoffs, you know, social status seems to be about the most important incentive and motivating force for social behavior in the world, certainly in Western society. And it's really tough to get a grip on. I'm not claiming to be an expert on this. In this book, I tried to seek out sort of the people who I thought were influencing
right.
this, were thinking about it in different ways, and highlight what they were telling me about status.
Well, even the concept of influencers, this, you know, I don't know if you know, I teach it at K-State, at Kansas State mm-hmm. University, and there's a lot of talk from Gen Z media-obsessed students who, you know, many of them want to be influencers. It just sounds great. Oh, I'm going to be an influencer. Well, okay, influence what, and influence based on what? I mean, why should somebody say, oh yeah, so and so said I should try this, and so I'm going to go out and buy it? That's fine. That's a recommendation. It's kind of a horizontal experience. Somebody you like on the online did that. But this concept of who's moving culture, that's also sort of fascinating for me, for the idea of a status revolution, because even the concept of what is considered to be a status item changes really fast. What would you say, other than fashion, then, are the status must-haves these days, or what are the former ones, or what are the ones that are coming?
Well, in terms of products, look, what I always say is that status is a reflection of social values, and our social values are changing, and that's why status is changing. Our society is becoming really balkanized at this point, right?
Yeah.
And so there's no uniformity of status across the culture anymore, and I think that's part of this. Social media certainly plays a big part of it. You know, you talk about influencers. Influence equals power, and that can equate to status. One of the other points I really try to get across in the book is that I think we need to divorce ourselves from this idea that money always equals status. And it's true that wealth and status often do go hand in hand, but there's a lot of other ways that people attain status aside from money. Some of the obvious ones are religious leaders, right? The Pope. The Pope
right.
has no salary, right? Officially, the Pope is takes a vow of poverty, and yet the Pope clearly has great status, not just within the Catholic Church, even around, you know, world leaders. The quarterback of a high school football team might enjoy terrific status and yet not really have any money to show for it. I like to say, you know, writers often get a decent measure of status conferred upon. They get asked to come on shows like this, and yet there's a very good reason that they often say of writers, he died penniless.
Right. 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 It actually probably proves that he was a good writer.
Exactly. But to get to the back to your point, which is that I think there are a lot of different ways that status is being reflected and that people are seeking out status. today that they weren't. And social media is an obvious, I mean, social media didn't exist, whatever, 20, 25, 30 years ago. And so, you know, within that community, there's become this new currency of status, and that is, at the moment, to be an influencer or a disruptor. Right,
yeah.
This is the other big one.
Yeah, a disruptor. Let's just face it, for people, that is one overused term. And when originally, when something was a disruption, it's because it came on, and it was so popular and so revolutionary, and it changed the game so strategically for a business that it literally killed off a sector. And the best way to look at that, as we talk about in class, is you look at Netflix killed off Blockbuster. The idea of the corner videotape store, that industry is gone. It just doesn't exist. Whereas at one point, you know, that they were getting these draconian penalties, and you were like, it was almost like court when you would go in to return something to the guy in the blue shirt at the behind the counter at Block. They'd look at you and you'd have to plead your case on why you'd have to pay $40 for a 2-night rental. and so, but then you compare that and now that's a disruption. But people say, oh, well, Lyft and Uber, you know, they disrupted the taxi cab industry. No, they didn't. They expanded it. And taxi cabs still exist. And the concept, in fact, what's happened is Uber and Lyft are now more expensive than getting a cab. The idea of the ride sharing is, you know, that's a dynamic pricing thing that people in taxis don't have. There's a set price when you get into a taxi, there is a price that can go up 2-3 times depending on how many Uber drivers are on the road at any one given time. So it didn't disrupt it. It just changed it and expanded it, but taxi cabs are still there.
And you bring up a point that's really important to me, and that I think is important about this status revolution, and that is that status is no longer, or should no longer be considered, a zero-sum game.
Right.
Status has widely been considered this finite commodity, right? If I had status, that meant you had less. And yeah, this is the paradigm that ultimately is what the status revolution seeks to overturn.
That's great.
Status is not just for the gilded elect. It's for everyone. It's an imperative being driven by a lot of different, on a lot of different levels.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
So give me an example then of other things which have become part of the must-have list as you see it, and the things that people are being peddled, and that whether it's some of these could have come and gone already, and I can think of a few that were at one time they were told was a status symbol, a symbol of your achievement for whatever group you are in, that now we kind of look back on it and we kind of like, that was quaint.
Well, I'm going to take exception with one of the, what I think is an underlying, idea of that, but I'll answer the question first. I mean, I opened the book with a chapter on rescue dogs, right?
Okay.
And for the research for this book, I really wanted to find examples of status and movement within a status hierarchy in sort of unexpected and surprising places, right? And right now, I opened the book, but there was a random woman I met in Wyoming while I was on a fishing trip, kind of rushed up to me and my buddy Chris and started bragging to us about her rescue dog and saying it was the same dog that was used in the Bin Laden raid and
right.
All this kind of stuff. That wasn't the first time that had happened to me on some level, right? That people were sort of presenting their dog as this item of status. And the interesting thing I found out about it was, I'd started reading books like by Thorsten Veblen, The Theory of the Leisure Class, which came out in 1899 and was kind of the totemic book of people studying status for more than a century. Frickin' Veblen bitches about dogs and dogs used as status symbols back in the 1890s. Right, so I really thought it'd be fun to kind of track this whole idea of how dogs have played a role in sort of status. And I started to wonder about the whole rescue dog phenomenon and within the dog, I'm not talking about virtue signaling right now, which is a sort of a sibling impulse of this thing, but within the dog community, 30 or 40 years ago, rescue dogs had no status whatsoever, right? Zero. And so how did they make such advances in the canine world? I mean, they have legal protections now. They're a whole class of dogs. And what was the catalyst for their, ascension? And so that's one of those things that to me, was really interesting in
that
a way that a purebred, dog that somebody might go to a kennel and seek out a purebred dog 30, 40, 50 years ago. Now they're going to the pound. They're going to dogs that, when you and I were growing up, guys drove around in vans and picked up and, euthanized
them. Right.
Right. So that's one example. But I've heard a couple times in this conversation, there's this kind of mocking or caustic approach to people who are seeking status, who are displaying status in certain ways. And I think that's part of what this status revolution is all about. Right? For more than a century, our understanding of status has been kind of rooted in this retrograde assumptions of, religious institutions and Judeo-Christian ethics and Enlightenment ethics and social science disciplines that were informed by Victorian era ethos, right? I mean, everyone from like Veblen, I mentioned Grandma Moses, right? They cast this long shadow of derision and disapproval on this basic human drive for status, right? Luxury is pernicious and status is sinful. It's a sign of moral weakness or that you've been duped by Madison Avenue sharps. But here's the thing that's going on right now. Today, we're using these modern methods of research and scientists and scholars are overturning these beliefs, right? They're using functional magnetic resonance imaging, right? MRI, fMRI. So using that, scientists can actually see activity in the brain's pleasure centers heightening at the exact moment that a person consumes, let's say, like a high-priced bottle of wine or some other product that's associated with elitism or prestige. And a lot of that pleasure center activity is created by this rush of dopamine, right? The brain's primary reward chemical. And what this means is that status seeking is it's not a product of vanity or artificially created social anxiety. It's a measurable biological function. And people, social critics in years gone by had no way of knowing that, but we can see that stuff now. So rather than mock the pursuit of status and luxury, right, these emerging group of scientists want us to accept status and status seeking in the same way we accept our need for oxygen and sexual
and
gratification,
sleep.
Right?
Right. And other forms of dopamine delivery.
Yeah. And right? If we understood, that's not to say that we need to give into this and just because it's a biological function that it's every part of it's good and we should overdo it. But I think there's a growing understanding that this, that status and status seeking is kind of an inevitable, if not healthy part of animal existence, right? Every single animal society arranges itself on a status hierarchy. They all do it. And so do we as humans.
Okay.
So rather than mock that pursuit or shame it, it's a lot better to understand it and accept it and work with it.
Okay. And here's what I would say. My point is about 5 degrees off of where you are. So my point is it's the actual objects themselves, not the pursuit. I'm not looking down in some sort of Calvinistic way of going, oh, you shouldn't want that. You should all life should all be about pleasure denying and all that. That was my dad. I mean, I know exactly what you mean. If identify the one thing that would bring you pleasure, and then he would be like, well, I can't do that. You know, and that was for whatever reason, that's where he got his dopamine rush, was in denying himself this, you know, right, this kind of weird aestheticism. But my point is this. And I think your dog analogy, I'll take it just in a slightly different way. The idea of a purse dog and being able to go onto a plane with a purse dog was for a period of time perceived as the status symbol of the elite, and that they would have a little dog and a purse and go and sit in first class. Well, now you get onto a plane, there are so many, you know, companion animals on some planes. It's like a Fisher Price see and say, you know, you just like the cow goes moo. I mean, it's like there's just, and so that's what I'm saying is that the things that people pursued that thinking that would, that's, I need that. That was considered like, that's the thing I need to have. When really, do you? And you have people then who are kind of gaming systems and applying for things and saying, I need to travel with my menagerie of animals because then I feel better being on a flight. Well, we all feel better on a flight if we can bring our dogs. But I think,
by the way, what dog isn't a comfort dog? That's what dogs,
right, are. Exactly.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.